and welcome to Grace by Rain, a podcast about the beauty in life. I'm your host, Elaine Shercliffe. Welcome back, everyone. Today, I have another guest. Joining me today is Alec Palmer, a sports marketing professional. Hi, Alec. How are you doing?
Hey Elaine. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be on. I know we followed each other for a little while, so it's cool to finally meet and discuss a little bit further.
Yeah, no, I was excited when you started working for Watch Momentum. I think that's about when I started following you. And then you started working for Bald and Wallace. And I was like, oh, my whole family, like very big Bald and Wallace people. So it's been a pleasure following you because it's got two things. I usually love sports and BW. So,
Hey, I'm glad I can bring both those to the table. That's for sure. Yeah,
perfect. So you teach at Bald and Wallace now, and you went there as well, right?
Yeah. So I attended Bald and Wallace for undergrad and grad school. I actually intended when I went there, I wanted to play baseball and I wanted to study neuroscience. I graduated after 5 years and did neither of those things. I actually, I played baseball for 2 years, ended up getting hurt, and I changed my major multiple times, ended up landing on accounting. So that's what I ended up graduating with. And then I got my MBA right after. So that was kind of my BW part, and at least academically. And then once I got hurt, it was like my sophomore year, I took a year off my junior year, and I just, I gained a ton of weight. My mental health just went to trash. And it was a really tough time because I played baseball my whole life. And then the first year I didn't, it really took a toll on me. I was missing my friends, missing the game. I missed all of the parts of baseball and just playing a sport, really. So I racked my brain figuring out how I could get back into it. And, being in Ohio, you see Ohio State everywhere. And, I'm an Ohio State fan. So now I'm from Pittsburgh, so we can get to that later. But I'm an Ohio State fan now. I was just like watching, they're the gold standard, on the field and in their media. And it was amazing to see what they were doing, the type of content they were creating. And I thought to myself, why can't we do that? I had one picture of myself in uniform playing baseball, and I played 2 years. I didn't play four, so maybe I would have had more, but it was pretty, I wanted more from that. I thought it wasn't fair. I wanted people to have more memories like that. So that's when I started getting into media. I started teaching myself Photoshop and Premiere and social media management and graphics and all of that stuff, how to use a camera. And I just started doing it. I probably should have asked a couple more times for permission, but I just did it. It caught fire. A lot of people really started to like it. We were the only school, specifically Division III, definitely in the OAC, doing it. And we got a lot of notoriety for it. People started hearing about that BW baseball was doing this media, and everyone was excited about it. People were loving the videos. And looking back, I'm like, it wasn't even that good. But for the time, for what it was really great. And now, being asked, because I started all that, I did it through my fifth year. I worked with men's basketball my fifth year, and baseball, and I built something there. And after that, I think every single program has had some sort of creative push, which is awesome to see since I left. And then about a year and a half after I graduated in August 2020, one of the professors in the sport management program reached out, and he and Dr. Campisi, he said, "Hey, do you want to teach a class?" And I was like, I've never taught anything in my entire life. Why, sure, I guess, but like, why are you asking me? He's like, well, we want to have someone who is in tune, is, young, who's ready, who's hungry to do it. And we want our students to learn from that. So I said, yeah. So I've been teaching there. It's my second year now. And they trusted me with a few extra classes now. So I'm teaching the class that they started and had me start was sport technology, where I'm teaching Photoshop, Premiere, social media management. And then they also added this year intro to marketing, which is just, a regular business school class, and sports marketing, which I'll teach for the first time in the spring.
Right. It's kind of wild how that all came to fruition for you, just based on, because you couldn't play baseball anymore and you channeled your energy into something completely different. I love that. It's also funny to me that you, I didn't know you were the one that did all that for BW during that time frame. Yeah. When my dad went to BW in the early 80s, he was the newspaper photographer and also for the yearbook. And he took tons and tons of pictures. Like we have so many pictures in our house of BW athletes, and he did it for sports.
Yeah.
For the longest time, he would be really disappointed that he didn't see that on social media. And when it started picking up, he was like, see, this could have been you. You could have been doing this. You could have gone to BW and been doing this. And so it's crazy to me right now that you were the one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's a big fan of you. More.
Well, awesome. Thanks. Thanks, Mr. Shercliffe. That's great. It's a great honor. No, but it was awesome. You know, we got, I don't know if you know, like the podcast about D3 baseball, the guys from Cespedes Family Barbecue, they do that. They both were, Jordan went to Worcester. So him and I bonded up. They talked about me on that, and I talked to them, and, you know, because BW was the only one doing it. And it was cool because I listened to that podcast when they started it, and then to hear my name on it was awesome. And then, you know, doing basketball, and now it just picked up, and now you start seeing, you know, the coolest thing to me was when I heard from a freshman who showed up, and he said, well, you know, the other schools were talking about it. They were talking about, oh, we're going to do more media. We're going to make a bigger effort to like get more pictures and videos. And I thought, I just laughed, because I'm like, it's funny that it's starting to like affect lives. And like, as like ridiculous as that sounds, you know, like they had to start recruiting against it. And our coaches loved it. And they, you know, Coach Harrison, Coach D, I owe them everything, you know, for where I've gotten and what I've done, because the opportunity they gave me and the trust they put in me to do it.
Yeah. I don't know. That's great. That's a way better origin story than I thought it was going to be. What are some things that you love about teaching that you didn't even think that you would love?
Yeah. It's funny because I'd recently not asked this question, but like I posed it to myself and I was like, why, you know, I go to therapy almost pretty much every week. And I've talked a lot about like my development and just how much I've changed as a person, just for the better, hopefully, you know. And the one thing I thought of was like, why do I love teaching so much? Why does it just like, I'm so excited. Even the days, like I'm exhausted today, you know, after working both jobs and everything, I get home and I'm excited to make my slides and show up tomorrow morning in class. Whereas, you know, when you're working a regular job, quote unquote, like it's not always the case. Even if you do love it, there are going to be days you don't want to. And, it hasn't been like that with teaching. And I think when I really analyzed myself, I thought back and I thought, what did I want to do? And I remember in eighth grade, I made a presentation. It was like, what do you want to do when you grow up? And I said, I wanted to be a sports medicine doctor and focus on orthopedics. And then I didn't, obviously. And then, you know, I wanted to, towards the end of my high school career, I wanted to work in fixing like Alzheimer's and in CTE and like head injuries in sports. That's why I went to neuroscience. And obviously I didn't do that. And the common thread through everything I wanted to do always has been to help people. Frankly, I don't have the patience to go to med school. I have the confidence. I know I could do it. I just don't want to. I don't know. But I just didn't ever see myself committing that many years to school because I wanted to make an impact. So that's what I did when I was at BW. And then after, you know, I was working momentum and then I started teaching. And what I really realized was this was my way of helping. This was my way of making an impact on people. And it's the feeling of feeling like you're actually doing something better for the world. It's something I think about a lot. And I don't know if I have a unique perspective, but I think I do, of working in sports. It's a privilege. It's a blessing. It's so cool to work in something that you love and you're a fan of. We have to keep in perspective at the end of the day, it's just sports. It's just entertainment. It's not the end of the world. It's not life or death. That's not to take away for the livelihood that we put down and the hard work we've done and the dedication, not at all. But you have to always step back and think, it's just a football game. It's just a baseball game. And that was something that always kind of sat there and I wanted to do more. I wanted to figure it out. And that's why I loved the initiatives that I loved to latch onto the initiatives at Momentum when we would be doing, you know, the branding workshop for minor leaguers or, you know, showcasing the AFL players and stuff like that, where it was like, we were helping people. I loved that part. And voices from the league and, you know, different things like that we did. I loved that. Then when I started teaching, I really felt that, like, finally that fulfillment, because I was making an impact on the next generation. And even though I could probably be considered in their generation of sports media professionals. It's cool to be able to give back so quickly and see them grow and kind of use, I want them to be better than me. I don't want them to be me. I don't want them to be at the same level. I want them to look back. I want them to be my boss. That's what I think. I want them to be running the company that I work for in my, whatever, my future career, because that's, then I know that I did my job.
Yeah. No, I love that. I identify actually a lot with what you say. So I also am not, I don't want to say I'm not a school person, but I went to school for physics and for vocal performance. And yeah, 2 years in, I was completely burnt out and they made me choose. They're like, you have to choose which one. And I asked them what the path was, and it was 7 more years of physics or 5 more years of music. And I was like, no. And I just left school and just kind of tried to figure out where I was going to divert my attention, which I'd always wanted to write and work in sports and help people. So I don't know why I didn't try to do that sooner. But that's like, I am the same way though. I want people to be better. I want them to be better versions of themselves. Being a writer can be so cutthroat. Yeah. And with the teams that I cover, I'm very much like, let's be a family. We don't have to get along all the time. That's fine. We can respect each other. And I'm okay with like feeding stories to people, you know, like ideas, you know, we can be together. We don't have to be so aggressively like, no, this is my story. You can't talk to me at all about it or anything like that. I think it needs to be fun. And we need to like, just be better, because if you're pushing someone to be better than you, the content's going to be better in the long run.
100%.
Yeah. You can't be the best unless you're up against the best.
Yeah. And how I've always thought of it, and my dad has told me, you know, never to be the smartest guy in the room. Because then, you know, it's, I don't know what the full quote is, but never to be the smartest guy in the room. I always want people who are smarter, surround myself with people who are smarter than me, because that's the type of environments I want to be in. I don't want to be the one where everyone's looking at you to like think of every single thing. You want to surround yourself with the best, because to me, I think that just lifts up the group as a whole.
Yeah. And I want people to challenge me, but challenge me in a compassionate and charitable way, not in a like a you suck way, but anyone that challenges me, even if it makes me annoyed or angry, I step back and I think, is this a valid thing? Should I be working on this? And honestly, 9.9 out of 10 times I should be. Yeah. And they're completely correct. I'm just put off by the way that they decided to approach me.
I get it. 100%.
Yeah. Now you mentioned a lot about mental health in this already. So what are ways do you think that social media could portray like positive mental health?
My journey with mental health has been definitely interesting. It's especially being public with it. You know, to me, I've never had a problem telling people anything about myself, to a fault, honestly. And so when I started talking about my mental health and started taking it seriously, it was different for me. I think the hardest part of tackling your mental health is admitting that there's something you need to work on. None of us ever want to feel like we need to be better and we need to work on something. And I think that's the hardest part. And a lot of people get really defensive over that. It's very easy to feel like it's a flaw. To me, it's not a flaw, but I also don't see it. You know, the way I look at it is I think a lot of people use their mental health or issues that they have as a crutch. And I think that's not the best way to go about it. I don't think that it should be glamorized. I don't think it should be ever, you know, cool or quirky or funny to like have it. Because I think it's something that people don't want. You know, we talk a lot about go to therapy and everything. Like the goal of getting to get better, right? You know, the goal is to, you don't want to be in like just deep depressive episodes for the rest of your life. That, you know, you don't have to accept that. And I think that is like the material fault in the discourse that we see on social media, right? It's a delicate balance between saying supporting and bringing it to attention and raising awareness for mental health, and then glamorizing it and using it as this personality trait and this, all this, because that's what really gets me upset is people who use their mental health and almost weaponize it to do different things, to make people feel bad for them, to you know, boost their brand and to do these things. I think that's wrong. I really do. And it's extremely frustrating. And you saw my tweets about professionalism and people just dogging on this guy who cheered for his team that he was working for. And sure, we can debate the professionalism of it and should he have done it or not? You know, sure, I guess he shouldn't have. But to me, it's so many people I saw who are 3 days ago, hashtag world mental health and taking care of your mentals and all this stuff. And then all of a sudden they're like, can you believe this idiot, how dumb and stupid and unprofessional he is? And I'm thinking, you realize that's a person, right? That's, you realize it's someone who probably knows who you are or might have heard of or might follow you, who might know. And he wakes up and sees everyone in his industry destroying him. I don't care how strong you are. That's not going to feel great when you wake up. And I think it was, to me, a very, very like astute example of people putting on this show and kind of saying it's cool to talk about mental health. It's not cool to talk about mental health. It's important to talk about mental health. It's vital to talk about mental health. It's not cool. You know, clothes are cool. Cars are cool. You know, things like that are cool. Mental health is not quote unquote cool. And I don't know if that could be very easily taken and ripped out of context, but the goal is to get better and you have to learn how to live with the things that you have and issues you may have, but that's what gets me fired up is I go to therapy to get better every week. I don't go to therapy to whine and complain and to drag on my mental health issues. Right. I like to think that a year and a half ago when I started going to therapy consistently, I am much better off. And I'm going to say my therapist thinks he's like, you've made a lot of progress. And I know, and I feel that. I know it's not done and it may never be done, but the goal is to get better every single time. It's not to kind of sit in this world of mental health. And I think that's the hardest, to get back to the beginning of the question. That's the thing social media, I think, kind of portrays. Is it's funny and it's quirky to be depressed or to have anxiety and all this stuff. And it's used as a crutch and a weapon. And that's when it goes too far to me. Yeah. I don't think it should be used. I think it's important. It's vital to bring awareness and to break the stigma. And when athletes are talking about the mental health struggles and all that, that's great. That's incredible because it's showing that that stigma is going away. And I think by and large it is. But we have to be careful at how we speak about it, because a lot of times people will take solace almost in the idea that they have a mental health issue. And I think that is where, you know, we go wrong. And to me, it's very hard to articulate that in tweets or in anything. And it's something that really, really like pulls on me because it hurts me to see people kind of, you know, use that part of their life as an object or as a weapon, and rather than to defeat it or to make it so you're better. So.
Yeah, no, I actually very much feel the same way. You know, in the hockey world, we always see Bell Let's Talk for like a whole day. And then about a week later is trade deadline and shit gets real.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, so did you not mean it? Because I feel like you're saying it's okay to not be okay. And we should look at people with kindness and compassion, but you're calling this guy a bum and a loser and you just are like, trade him away.
Yeah.
it just drives me a little mad. It irks me. That's why I have been very, social media can be a great place, but like you said, it can be very unsafe for people who want to be open about their struggles, and not in the sense of like, look at me, but for those who might be calling out for help, or they just want to let people know what they're going through, just in case someone else is going through that. So I used to always be one of those people that was like, I'm fine. Like I have resting smiley face. So like everyone automatically assumes I'm always happy. Yeah. And I'm not. And my boss made me go to counseling. They made me go. Because I was going on a work trip and we were about to go wheels up and I turned the plane around because I was having an anxiety attack.
Wow.
And that moment changed my life for the better, like totally better. I'd never had, first of all, a job that cared enough about me. My family was so understanding. They'd never seen me break down ever or be what they considered like mentally imperfect.
Yeah.
Is what my cousin said. We've never seen you be mentally imperfect. And I'm like, yeah, that's because I'm the oldest in our generation and everything always fell on me. And I needed you guys to feel safe in your feelings, but that meant I couldn't be safe in mine. And I think I started talking about it more, you know, during the pandemic, because I felt like it was more important. And then, you know, I covered the Monsters. So after Matisse Kivlenix died, I just was like, I need a break. And everyone was so warm and loving about it. I was very shocked. And so I like that the tide is turning a little bit on that end, where people aren't roasting people who are legitimately like, I need help or I need a break. But I wish, like you said, it was, sometimes it feels very performative. Yeah. And some people use it for just content and they make it their whole personality, and it's not.
Yeah. We're bigger than our mental health. That's it. You know, being depressed is not, if someone says, how do you describe your personality? You should not be saying I'm depressed, because it's not true. Personality is who you are. You're a human being. You do things. Yes. Are there issues that you might have? Sure. But I think that we're bigger than our mental health. And again, a lot of people might misinterpret that at first thought, because you might think, well, you know, we're better than it. You don't have to worry about it. No, like it is, it's an integral part of who you are. And to be able to take care of yourself and to make sure to maintenance it too. A lot of, the other way when I talk about, the idea is to get better. Well, we all know that it's a thing you have to work on consistently, and maybe you don't have to go to therapy for the rest of your life, but the things you learn from that, things you've learned from your experiences, you then can use every day. I know, to me, I have a very tough time kind of attacking large projects and large things. Even if it's just cleaning up my apartment, I will avoid it. I will sit down on the couch. I'll be on TikTok. I'll say, I'll do it tomorrow. I'll do it tomorrow. I'll do it tomorrow. I'll do it tomorrow. And then I never do it. So what I had learned, and what I still have to make sure I remind myself every time, any type of large project, but cleaning the apartment's an example, is I have to break it down into tasks and think, okay, let's take out the trash. All right, when I take out the trash, I'm going to feel accomplished. Let's wash the dishes. Then you capitalize on that achievement feeling. All right, let's make the bed. Let's do, and you build on it. And that was something I had to understand that I'm going to have to do, because I, as a person, have a tough time attacking large projects and things. So I have to think about it in tasks and break it down and achieve small bits at a time. And that's not something where I'm like, I'm going to do it 10 times and then it's done, right?
Right.
It's like working out. You can work out for 5 straight years, but then if you just never work out again, you're going to regress. You're going to gain the weight back, or you're going to lose the muscle or whatever you did. And to me, that's how it is for your mental health. Your physical health, you take care of yourself. You eat better foods, you work out, you go on walks, you get vitamin D, all of that, right? Well, you have to do the same type of things for your mental health. You got it. Maybe it's going to therapy. Maybe it's taking a walk. Maybe it is working out helps your mental health. Doing things that work those muscles in your brain to make sure you're feeling better. And I think that's lost in the conversation a lot too, is people just think, well, I'll just go to therapy. That is not the answer. It is, you need to go to therapy. Finding the answers inside therapy. Therapy to me, and I talked about it with my therapist. He said, it's different for everyone, but for me, I needed somewhere to organize my thoughts. If I cannot organize my own thoughts. I know it. I start getting all scatterbrained. When I'm in therapy, I say a bunch of things, and he's like, okay, all right, let's break this down. Here's the first thing you said. Here's the second thing you said. Here's the third thing you said. Let's talk about the first. We talk about it. Then we break down the second, and then everything makes sense. And then I have to work on that every day. So it's to me, it's very much like exercising. It's very much taking care of your physical health. So it's not a get rich quick scheme, right? It's not one thing. You have to work on it. And I think that's often lost in the mental health this course. And I think it's because there's just a lack of depth on social media. And I'm not, it's not a condemnation. I just think it's very hard to get deep on social media. A tweet thread maybe is deep, but still you're limited. So I think it's tougher. It's tough to do that. And it's tough to convey the exact messaging you're trying to push as well.
Right. Yeah. So two things from that, like I have to shut off my brain all the time because during the season, it's just going. And my counselor explained it to me in terms of being a music professional is that you don't just show up to my voice lesson without having done like my scales or my warm-ups or even just sitting down and working on the melody of a song. Like there's work that has to be put into it. You don't just show up to work and expect to just do your job. There's some sort of like preparation, and that's how you should look at everything you do. And I was like it just kind of hit me in a way where I was like, oh, okay, that makes sense. Yeah. And on the subject of being like the depths of Twitter, it is tough. And as someone that's in post-game press conferences all the time, I have constantly tried to work on getting to the point quicker, but still with retaining that message. And I feel like that's helped me as well on Twitter. It's using different words. It's using the right words, not being so general about things. And sometimes it has to go into a thread. And I think that's one of the best things Twitter has ever done was make the thread when people don't make threads and I have to go through and I'm like, oh, your points are so good, but I do not want to retweet every single tweet. Yeah. Now, how do you feel on the sports aspect? Like, I feel like it's great that athletes have been more open, but what do you think that we could do even just as fans to just embrace that a bit more?
One thing that stuck with me, and it's not necessarily related specifically to this, but it made me think in a way that I never really thought of. Right. I think it was like, I want to say it was like Arian Foster, like former NFL running back. It's on a podcast and he's talking about how things don't change overnight. And like, yes, we've all heard that, but the way he articulated it was so interesting to me was just, he was talking about conversations that happen within the NFL, whether that's social issues or mental health or anything, right? When they first come up, everyone's screaming about it. Everyone's mad. It's very polarizing. You know, a lot of those issues came up 4, 5, 6 years ago in the NFL. And now they're just part of the conversation of the NFL, whereas they were injected into it and felt like, you know, this is the NFL. We can't have that stuff. And now it's, oh yeah, part of the NFL is them pushing for, you know, betterment of social issues or different actions or whatever it may be. And the way he articulated it was so interesting because I just think about that all the time. We want so badly for people to be accepted for mental health or sexual orientation or whatever it may be, right? And it's not overnight. We know that. And to see, even take back to the last 2 years when people first started talking about mental health to where it is now, it is something that every major outlet talks about. It is something that more and more players are feeling comfortable talking about in press conferences and on Twitter and to each other. And this idea that all of a sudden, if we do just enough work today and tomorrow, it's going to be perfectly fine. It's not, you know, it's going to be years before that happens. And that's okay. Things like this don't change overnight. There are millions and millions of people involved who all have different life experiences and different thoughts and processes. So the idea that we can switch this whole conversation tomorrow is not realistic. So when I think of it that way, I look, how far have we come? How far do we want to go? You know, how much further do we want to go? And you know, you see, this is another thing that gets me upset about social media sometimes is, you know, I think we see a lot of it in, you know, another thing we're talking about is like women in sports, right? That conversation has really gotten a hold of the last year. It's one of those things that's going to take time to change. We all know it's right. We all know it's the right thing to do, but it's going to take time to change. And I think
to break the habit, you have to be able to break that habit. If you can't they say it takes at least 27 days to break the habit. Yeah. And if you're not doing it consistently, it's going to take longer than the 27 days. And I feel like not many people understand that. And yes, I fall into the trap as well. Like, I'll see an all male panel and I'll be like, wow, there's so many women on that panel. Like,
yeah. No. And the thing is, it's like, it's good to keep it in the forefront of conversation. I 100% think, I just think having unrealistic expectations for all of a sudden tomorrow, every single player on the Cavs or whatever is going to come out and talk about their deepest, darkest mental health battles. It's not going to happen. It's probably never going to happen. And
it shouldn't happen. In my opinion, I'm Catholic. And one of the things that they always bring up for us when we're younger is guarding your heart, not putting a wall up, but you sometimes have to guard your heart a little bit. You have to feel it out. You can't let everyone know everything about you. There's still things that, you know, it's okay to keep to yourself. And I feel like that is one thing about sports that also really frustrates me is fans not understanding that they don't owe you anything. They don't owe you their whole life story. When I am interviewing a player, if I can tell they don't want to talk about it, we're not talking about it. Yeah. I'm not going to push you. I'm not going to ask you. Like, after Kobe Bryant died and people asking about Kobe that day after the game, I was like, oh, I get you want the story, you want the clip, but like, these guys just came off the field. They were just playing. Well, the court, they were just playing and they won. And then you hit them with that question. Like, I know you want the story, but I think more people need to think that like, there's a time and a place. And no one owes you their whole life story.
No, you're 100% right. And I think slowly but surely, it's becoming more and more normalized. And I think that's all we can ever ask for. Right. You know, you can never ask for everyone to be lined up, ready to share their stories. And I don't think you should. But I think as we continue to normalize these types of conversations, you know, there's a reason there's a ton of different, you know, shows and parts of, you know, segments and little things about mental health and all this stuff, because it's become more and more normal. And I think the one thing I wanted to mention was we love to still kind of wallow in the people who don't want to change.
Yes.
We love to bring up, you know, the one guy or the one girl or the one person who replies on Twitter and is like, I don't care about Kevin Love's mental health. And then we're all like, you know what? This is what's wrong with sports. And it's like, that's not the majority anymore. We're slowly transitioning over to things like that. And that's where I think we as a society and we as, you know, an industry or whatever kind of fail, because you can only kind of harp on the people who are against, you know, on your opponents for so long before you're just giving them credence and they're just going to do it. They're like a bully. They just do it to get reactions. They do it to fill something up in their body that they don't have. Right. And I think it's when we're talking about mental health and there's the one person that disagrees and then we just dunk on them. It's like, yeah, but did you not read the 150 other replies who are like, this is great. We love this, you know, and take that for what it's worth. As much credence as you're putting into this one random, like, you know, Patriot 015810, like, for some reason, you think that's the most important person when everybody else in that thread is talking about how incredible that story is. So I think that's what we see. And I think we're in that transition period where people don't know. And we like to like beat up on the straw man to make ourselves feel high and mighty, when in reality, the rest of the industry is like, yeah, mental health is good.
Right.
You should be taking care of yourself. We want that.
Right. And we should be lifting up those people. When we see I get tired of people only responding to the haters. Like, I try to respond to everybody. I'm not super famous, so obviously I can do that. One of the things is, like, I know there are some people who talk a lot of crap about Barstool and their fans. I've had Barstoolies come into my mentions and just like kind of attack me. And because I respond to everyone, instead I respond charitably. And I take it at face value and I explain why I feel what I do. And if they are getting off it, I'm like I did see some guy say once about Kevin Love, he doesn't care about his mental health issues. And I was like, you know what? that's your opinion. I care about you. I hope that you are having a good day. And they came into, they came into my like DMs, because I keep my DMs open, and they were like, you know what? I'm actually having a really shitty day. And yeah. I was projecting, and I appreciate that. And I was like, oh, cool. I didn't know that. And it's not like that for everyone. Some people are just a-holes, but there is that importance, I think, on social media where we need to lift people up, you know, and we need to treat them like humans. So yeah, they come at you and they bring bad energy. Your choices could be to not respond, or you can meet them with the energy that you want.
Yeah. Yeah. It's tough to have that balance of putting people in their place when they're blatantly wrong. And then, you know, educating. And I think one thing that we saw with the whole photographer cheering debate was, it's very easy to just jump on the bandwagon and dog on this guy and, you know, feel like you did something. But I really hope that someone reached out to him and said, hey, listen, like, I don't know what everyone has been talking about. Like, whether they did anything right or wrong, like, that's wrong what they're doing. And I would hope that maybe it's their, his boss or whatever, whoever took the time to educate him on what was happening, on why people were mad. And then whatever they decide to do next is up to them. But the fact of the matter is like, we're so quick to just try to just pull people down. He didn't commit a crime. He didn't say anything wrong. It was not like nothing where like it deserved a reaction of like people questioning his character.
Right. And that picture was amazing. Okay.
Yeah.
That celebration took that picture to a whole nother level. It would have just been another picture.
Yes.
But with him in the background, it was like, oh, that's content. That's money. Like I look at it from that standpoint of like, oh my gosh, the person who got that picture, like chef's kiss, like, oh,
like, you're so exactly good. Right. It was just so weird to see people just calling out this random guy for all this stuff. And they're like, he should be banned from professional sports.
I know.
Are you serious?
Right.
Why don't we start with all the terrible people that are in professional sports? Let's ban them.
Right. But let's not ban the pure of heart.
The abusers, like, are we going to do that? You know,
right.
Like, if you're not willing to go into that, then, you know, don't talk about this guy who's cheering. Even if the guy is a total jerk and he doesn't care, he does it all the time and pisses people off. Who cares? It's still not harming anybody.
Right.
And, you know, I get the argument too of like, it hurts the reputation of photographers and stuff. And listen, I get that. Understand it. However, if that was what was going to change your reputation on photographers, like, you already did not have a good like, right? viewpoint of photographers. That was not the real thing, the straw that broke the camel's back. Like,
right.
You just didn't like photographers, and that's okay. Whatever.
Yeah. Well, and like my dad and I talked about that because he, like I said, he was a photographer, and he was like, what was he going to be able to get? What was he going to be able to capture in that moment? Because where the action was happening, where the moment was completely the other way. So he's like, go on, photograph man, like, just celebrate because you weren't getting shit.
Yeah, well, and the fact of the matter is, at the end of the day, if he missed the shot, it was a week 5 game for the Bills.
It's not the Super Bowl.
2021, you know? No one's ever going to remember. The only reason people remember that game is because of this photographer debate now.
Right.
Like, no one cares. Yeah, was it a great game? People are going to remember it this year, maybe even next, sure. But in the grand scheme of things, no one's going to care if he got this shot because it wasn't. Yeah, it's just.
No, I know the professionalism debate too. Also,
yeah,
it gets in a weird place for me. Like, there was one time where I took a selfie with the backdrop of a team before a press conference happened, and I ended up being in the background of a picture, which I didn't. If I knew, I would have just like stayed out of the picture. I'm not in the pictures. I like to take them. Like, there is a difference. But I had a talk to you about being professional. And the reason why I took the selfie was because my cousins, you know, I'm the oldest in my generation. I'm 36. The youngest is about to be born. So there's like this huge gap in our generation. There's like 30 of us in our generation that range from 36 to like negative age. They're very interested in what I'm doing because they love sports. And a lot of them are women who want to be in sports one day. And so I was on Snapchat and I took them through my whole entire day, like what I do the moment I leave work, how I pick out my outfit, what I do with my hair, what do I eat, like all of that. Yeah. And the one of the last things is I couldn't hold my phone. Like I needed to tape with my phone and voice record. So I couldn't like show them the actual thing at that moment. So I just took a selfie so they could see like, this is the backdrop. Like, I guess I could have just taken a picture of the backdrop, but it was just like an interactive thing for them. And it was so weird for me to be like, someone thought I was fanning, that I was being a fan. Like the immediate reaction was that I was being an air quotes fan. Mm-hmm. And that just like blew me away because one, I think you have to be a little bit of a fan to cover the sport properly, any sport that you're covering. You have to enjoy it because you won't, I don't think you'll portray the message well enough if you don't love it enough to try and understand everything about it. Yeah, I love the Monsters a lot, and I love some of the other teams I cover, like the Wolves and the Griffins and the Admirals. And but I'm different when I'm watching not as a fan. Like I'm not yelling at the refs or like screaming, or, and I feel like there's just way too much pressure on some writers to be this sense of professionalism that doesn't make sense to me. Like when people are like, oh, why are you wearing like leggings and a nice sweater? Like why this wasn't people that like the team I covered was like fans. They were asking me, they're like, you should be wearing like a suit jacket and all of this. I'm like, it's a Tuesday game. There's literally 2,000 people here. There are no scouts here. There's no man. Like I just came from working a 10-hour day. Like I am not getting dressed up. I don't have to dress up for work. So I'm not dressing up here.
No, you're 100% right. It's this weird. I think the weird idea of like professionalism is it's so odd to me that we put so much weight into things that don't matter at all. You know, for the longest time, it was unprofessional to have tattoos. And you're like, why? And you really think about why. Mm-hmm. There's no answer. It doesn't make anybody any better or worse at their job, you know?
Right.
Like, you know, they're not coming in high and can't do their job. Yes, exactly. Sure. That is very much unprofessional.
Right.
You need people to do your job. They have tattoos. I don't understand. Like, sure, you know, whatever. And I think there's like a balance there too, because sure, some people might believe that they might be offended by tattoos or something. And, you know, sure, I think to me, you should, okay, respect that. Maybe you cover it up or wear long sleeves. I don't know, whatever that is. But I think it's this weird like idea that we just made up to put pressure on people. And the one thing I regret to me, I think the most is I wish I would have taken more pictures of myself at the cool stadiums I got to go to while I was working at Momentum, or the cool things I got to do, because I felt that pressure of like, I don't want to look like a fan. I don't want to look like, you know, I'm young already. I'm new. None of these photographers know me. They're just going to, and I wish I had done more. And now I'm going to like make it an effort and every cool experience I have to take that picture because I want to remember it. Right. And at the end of the day, me taking a picture at Fenway Park did not make me do my job any worse or any less.
Exactly.
And the fact of the matter is people will talk about, you know, a lot of the athletes we talked about, and I think you probably heard it too, is it's respecting them as well to what they do. You know, I don't think it's right to walk up to an athlete in the middle of their dinner with their girlfriend or their buddies or their family.
Thank you.
I think that's weird. I think it's weird to like walk up and interrupt their life. But I think there's also a time where it's perfectly fine. I think it's about respect more than anything. Mm-hmm. I think people, if you are covering sports, you're working in sports, you're probably a sports fan. Very rarely do you see someone who doesn't like sports in sports. There are, but you know, it's rare.
Yeah.
So when I get to go to Fenway Park, as one of the most historic parks, there's arenas or stadiums or venues in the world, I want to take a picture of that. I think that's interesting.
Right.
I want to show people I was there, and I want to show my dad, and I just want to show my pap, and like, you know, talk about that. And the idea that I can't because some weird professionalism argument is there, and it just doesn't make sense. You know, I think there's dressing. I don't like to underdress. I always am like very, I'm always worried about underdressing. Mm-hmm. So that's me. But if someone can come up and do their job in shorts and a t-shirt, I could not, there's nothing I could care less about.
Right.
Like now, if you're showing up a t-shirt and shorts and you're also not doing your job, Yeah, sure. I'm going to throw in like, and you don't dress good. Like when I'm mad at you, because it's just a thing, you just throw it in there and like pile on. But, you know, I'm more worried about you doing your job. And that's where people like it. That's where I think all this stems from is who cares if you're doing your job? Good. Who cares? Doing your job well. I don't mind. You know, I talked to my dad about it. He works in the financial industry. He used to work for a large financial company and they would make them wear suits every single day. And he said, okay, well, there's clients in and out of this, you know, whatever. He had to meet with whatever. One day he was like, he showed up in like jeans and like a sweatshirt or something. Or I don't know. He showed up in like more casual clothes. And they talked to him. And he's like, why can't I show up? I don't have to meet any clients. I'm just coming in to work on my computer. Why? I'm in my cubicle. No one can see me. Like, who cares? And they just, you know, you just get angry and there's no answer. Because it doesn't matter. So if you can't answer me specifically why, then there's no reason I shouldn't be able to do it. And that's where like this weird professionalism debate starts and ends to me is like, if it's going to hinder you doing your job. Yeah, sure.
If and not, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. You know, it's frustrating. It's frustrating to like hear the stories. You know, I was in those photo wells and getting elbowed and pushed out of the way and getting the dirty looks and the comments and everything. Like, you know, there's women who go through that every single day. There's minorities who go through it every single day. There's everyone who goes through that. And then those same people are like, oh, you're not professional. I'm like, what about the time you elbowed me out of the way because you don't think I deserved a spot in the photo well? That was professional. Right. I don't want to hear your thoughts on someone cheering in one of the biggest games of their lives.
Like, exactly.
That's the thing that got to me. It means nothing. And these people who defend it kind of stand for nothing.
Yeah, exactly. I haven't experienced too many issues or times when someone like disrespected me or even just like was upset about my professionalism. It was really like just like one or two times, which to me is not a big deal. Cause I'm like, okay, one or two times, it's not a big deal. Like I had purple hair and the GM of the jackets, who was also the GM of the Monsters, was like, oh my God, you have purple hair. My daughter would love that. And I was like, yes, like, we're changing the tide here. Like, it felt, and the fact that it felt super progressive was like, it blew my mind to think that like, oh wait, we've come so far. And even just in the seasons, that was season 3, I think, for me. So in the 3 seasons I had been there, for it to go from like, fans asking me why I wasn't wearing a blazer all the time to the GM going, oh my gosh, I love your purple hair. It's like just in 3 years. Now there is one thing about sports I was also kind of wondering is, do you feel like sometimes it's hard though for athletes or people who work in sports to move forward because so many people just bring up things from the past, like 10, 8, even 4 years ago, and don't look at what's happened in that span of time? Like, you know, you see it on draft day where people go through these kids' tweets and they're like, when they were 13, they said this. And I'm like, okay, but what have they been like since then? Like, if it's a consistent thing, if it's a newer thing, I totally get it. Like, let's have that conversation. But I feel like often the people want you to just be good all the time and they don't think that you can change.
Well, yeah, no, I it's tricky because I wrangle with how I feel about that a lot. And I, you know, when you hear stuff now, you know, the John Gruden stuff came out and Washington football team and all this stuff. And I think about it and I'm like, you know, what defines a person's kind of character versus what did they say out of ignorance or what did they do out of ignorance? And the idea that one is character driven and one is ignorance driven. I don't know which is worse, you know,
right?
Like to like actively not learn about something. Because I, you know, one thing I think through is I drove across the country to and from Arizona and we're stopping and for gas and restaurants and whatever in these small little towns and, you know, they're the most pleasant people on earth. And then you think about what people talk about and like people in middle America, you know, they're just racist. They don't know anything. And, you know, and I, that aside, I think the thing that was most interesting to me was just how different the world is, specifically just in America, just the difference in life, what you hear, the way people act, the way, the things, the people they see, the types of people they see. It's just very, very different. And a lot, I think, is unless you're actively seeking out difference or different parts, it's going to be very hard for you ever to understand the difference out there. Mm-hmm. So if you're in a small town of 500 people, predominantly, you know, white, traditionally Christian people, you're not going to ever really understand the different things that go on in large cities. You know, the crazy diversity, how it's a huge melting pot and there's amazing people of different creeds and backgrounds and orientations and all this stuff. It's amazing to see, but you're never going to really ever comprehend that because you can't see it as well unless you're seeking it out. So I think that is one thing that's very tough for me to like condemn, because it's hard to say you're going to actively seek it out, and it's hard to like condemn someone who never was experienced anything else. So I think that's one part of it. But two, it's always interesting when things come up about like John Gruden or these guys who get drafted and then their tweets from 2012 pop up or 13 and, you know, probably some slurs thrown in there and stuff like that. And it's interesting. I don't know. I don't want to believe like a 13-year-old's character is set in stone when they're 13.
Right.
But I think there's also part where it's going to be case by case. I don't think it's a sweeping generalization. I think there's a lot of people who probably, you know, were young, said stupid things because they didn't know, you know, mm-hmm. when you're in middle school, when you're in high school, you don't know what any of those words mean really. You know, it's very, very tough. And to then punish someone in 10 years after for that, I think you then say, okay, well, should we punish them? Well, have they become a better person? Have they actively tried to learn? Were they now in the capacity they could learn more and open their mind and be more inclusive? Because to me, that is more important than what they may or may not have said when they were younger. Because if they've made that effort, then they've noticed, they've beaten up themselves about it. And they said, I shouldn't have done that. You know, I really am not proud of it. And I wanted to be better. And I think the keyboard warriors that we see out there condemning all these people, you have to have that perspective that I'm sure everyone had, like we all did the same thing. You know, no one, it's very, very hard. It's very unique to grow up in an environment necessarily where like everything's going to be perfect and you're going to turn it out to this perfect person. You know, you have to be able to learn for yourself and open your own mind. It's very often it's not going to happen for no bad reason necessarily, but I don't know. It's a tough one for me. I don't know. I don't know if I have like the best answer. I just think it's very much about the person, what they've done to make it better.
Yeah.
And that one thing could be auditing your social media from years ago, mm-hmm. because if you're not that same person, then don't keep it on there.
Right. Yeah. No, I feel the exact same way. I think it's case by case. The sweeping generalizations in general, like I just don't like sweeping generalizations.
Yeah.
Every situation is different. Every person is different. Everyone has different experiences. To talk about someone that you've never met, that you don't know, and just assume that everything they said was out of malice is really hard for me to do. I try to find the best in everyone, but I'm also like realistic about it as well. So I just wish more people would do that as well, because I think it would make social media a more fun place.
<I'm sorry. laughs>
Now two more things though. And then I'll let you go because I know you had a really long day.
But
what are some things that you would like to see integrated into sports media to just make it better and more exciting?
I'd love to stop seeing like instant reactions almost. I think social media breeds this, like we have to have an opinion on everything. And to be honest, there's just some things I just don't give a shit about. And I don't want to say anything. And then you feel this pressure, like I need to say something. And then you're just like, well, what are they going to notice that I didn't say anything? And then I need to say it. So you say it and you're like, I didn't really believe that. And then it's this weird like dilemma you get in. And I think we don't all have to have an opinion on every single thing. I think that's like the worst thing social media ever did was everyone felt like their opinion mattered at every single turn of their entire life. And yeah, frankly, it doesn't. And that's not a bad thing. Like, I don't want my opinion to matter on every single thing that happens, because it doesn't. A lot of things don't affect me. So I can give my opinion, but for what, you know? Right. And I think it's, you know, it's from big things to stupid things. Like when Instagram changes something and everyone feels the need to be like, oh, how terrible is this? And you're like, it doesn't matter.
Right. Sorry. You're going to like it and use it anyways. Like, let's be honest.
Yeah. You know, like, and even it's down to like, even Facebook is like with the whistleblower stuff, right? Yeah. We know. Right. What opinion? Like, yeah, they manipulate every single person on earth and they cause issues. We know that. And like, people were like getting fired up about it. And I'm like, do you not pay attention to like what goes on in the world? Like, it's these reactions that we're like forced to like force out. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's just not, it's not that serious. I think about that all the time. Like, it's really, things are just not that serious. And that's a bad like juxtaposition to like the Facebook thing, because that is terrible. Yes. Yes. Is that. But like, especially in sports, it's just not that serious.
Yeah. I just want to make sports fun again. Like,
you don't have to feel like you have to have a reaction on every single person who messes up, or every single event, or every single story that comes out. To be honest, no one really cares all that much what you have to say. And even the people who do follow you and do care, they're probably not going to, like, they will seek you out to find out what you have to say about it.
Yes. So very, very true.
That's my, like, my big thing. I want us to like, just think about our reactions a little bit more. If I see something, I don't want to feel pressured to like have a constructed reaction to it for no reason.
Right. Well, and then the thing too, is when you start responding to everything and having reactions to everything, then that's all you see.
Yeah. Like, then people expect it even more.
Right. And so for me, I just go through things and I'm like, that's a thing. That's a thing. Okay.
Yeah, like, that also exists in this world,
right? like that's how it is for me. I have so many opinions on things, but also at the same time I don't. Like, there are things where I'm like, the retweet button is beautiful because yes, they said it correctly and their opinion's good. Sometimes I'll be like, I don't agree with this opinion, but I like how they said it, because I don't want someone to be like, yeah, she's an awful person, and I'm like,
oh, yeah,
let's not get reactionary there.
Well, I think it's funny. I don't want to belabor the point too long, but there's a guy I followed for a while, and I'm sure everyone knows who he is, but he's always tweeting about different facts and things in sports, business, and all this stuff. And I always think of the old like cliche of like, either die a hero or live long enough to see yourself become the villain. Mm-hmm. And like, that is like the perfect example of so many personalities in sports media, because they're conditioned that everyone thinks they need to know what this person thinks about it. So they just start putting off reactions, and they're like, oh, people like this one and they like this one. And then boom, they have a bad one, and it shows everything. It shows, yeah, all of their character right there. And that's what it's like. It's very dangerous. You don't even give yourself time to process. You don't give yourself time to think. I'm just as guilty. I'll fire off a couple quick reaction tweets and be like, I did not think about this through. Like,
yeah, I deleted a few tweets sometimes, because I was like, oh, yeah, I shouldn't have said that.
Yeah. So it's that where I just like, take a second.
Yeah.
You don't have to be the third person to like, to respond and to react to it. Mm-hmm. You can take a second. And I know I need to do better about it too, but I think that's the thing I want to see most moving, yeah, forward.
Same here, but more from like the writing standpoint. Yeah. I am really lucky that I have an editor who doesn't give me a deadline. Yeah. So I sit back after the game, you know, I pull out what quotes I want. I've written kind of throughout the game, and I just sit there and I let it marinate. And then I write about it. And I know that that's a very unorthodox way of being a sports journalist. But I want it to be the best version that it can be. And yeah, just pounding one out before like 11 o'clock when post game ends at 10:30, you're not going to get the best version of what that game actually was.
Yeah.
Obviously if I was working for a newspaper, that'd be a different story. And like, I would adjust and I would learn how to decompress faster.
Yeah.
But I feel like too many times with writing, they're like, we have to put out this post right now before they get any of the information. And I'm one of those people that, like, I sit back and I see what else comes in. I see if I can get a hold of a player, or I can get a hold of someone else, or even just see how it works out. Yeah. See what another writer is saying about the situation, and then attack it head on, because people are going to remember the first thing you post. And if it's wrong and you write a better article later, they're still thinking about that first one. It doesn't matter. You lost them.
Exactly.
So one more thing, because you are from Pittsburgh and you are a big Steelers fan. Yeah. We need to talk about this Brown Steelers rivalry.
Well, I'll be at the game on Halloween in Cleveland. That'll be my third Steelers Browns game since I've lived up here. This is the one I'm like
worried
it's
about.
Gonna be an experience. But no, I think it's, I don't know. I think the Browns are good. I think that Baker is a franchise quarterback. I don't think he's an elite quarterback.
Hold on. I just have to soak that in for 1 second, that somebody from another team thinks he's a franchise quarterback.
Yeah. I mean, I love 92.3 The Fan, because I hate Pittsburgh's 93.7 The Fan. They're the worst. They just hate everything. Everything's just the end all be all. It's just the worst. I could never listen to it, but I get to Cleveland and they're like normal people just talking. It's like, finally. So every day to work, I listen to like Ken Carman and Anthony Lima, and love them. And they articulated it so well, talking about, I think it was Ken was saying, you can be a franchise quarterback. You don't have to be a top five quarterback ever to be a franchise quarterback. And to me, like, that is something that I think the Browns have. I think the Browns have a top 15 every year quarterback. Baker's never going to be a Patrick Mahomes, a Tom Brady, anything. And if that's okay.
No one's going to be Tom Brady. I'm sorry.
Exactly. So that's all right. And I think that, you know, plays on a lot of fans, but to be honest, I think it plays on him a lot. And it's similar. It's like, eventually you just got to get over it, you know, of like Baker, I think could be like a very weak point in the offense or in the team, because he's so susceptible to like the critiques. Mm-hmm. He's always wanting to respond and everything. And it's like, I think that's part of being a franchise quarterback, is just being like, listen, guess what? I'm still getting paid. I still win. I still bring the team to the playoffs. Like, it doesn't matter what people critique you about. And I think that's like part of his growth process. So hopefully he goes through that. Secondly, though, I think that, I think the Steelers are better than what they've shown in the last couple of weeks. And last week was great. I still think the AFC North, I think everyone's going to split. I don't think anyone's getting swept. I think the Bengals are for real.
Yeah.
Even when the Browns were 0-16, the games against the Steelers were great. The games against the Ravens were great. I don't think that anyone's getting swept. I think we're all going to split. I don't know if the Steelers make the playoffs. I hope Ben retires after this, because we need to get move on. And he's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. And, you know, it was amazing to watch him for so long. But I think the one thing I think I've described the Browns great. is when the Browns, so when you're a team that surprises everyone and like, oh shit, they're kind of good, you know, like it's not easy. It's easier. It's a better position to be in, to show up to a team and surprise them and be good. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what happened last year with the Browns. People were expecting them to be good, but they were really good. And they showed up into all these different stadiums and like got to the playoffs, won when they needed to win. They beat the Steelers. They took Kansas City to the wire, and everyone was like, oh my God, they're actually good. But now this year, the Browns have a target on their back. They're not getting overlooked. They're not surprising anyone. And I think the second year is when you prove how good your team really is. And so I think this is a big telling year for the Browns. If they, for some reason, don't make the playoffs, they are going to have a rough few years trying to figure out what they want to do. If they do make the playoffs, I think it shows that they're good. And I think they're going to be a force to be reckoned with. But it's a big, big year when everyone realizes you're good. And now you get everybody's A game. You walk into Kansas City and they're ready to take you down. you don't walk, you know, like last year you walked into Kansas City and they're like, oh, it's just the Browns, right?
Right. No.
Now it's the Browns are coming to town. We got to prepare. So I think that's a tough thing for the Browns. Listen, I've been spoiled as a Steelers fan. my life is my own living hell, being a Steelers fan in Cleveland for the NFL season.
Especially when they're good.
Yeah. Right now I'm honestly some weeks rooting for the Browns to lose harder than I'm rooting for the Steelers to win, because I just want to, like, I can't deal with it some weeks where I'm just like, oh my God, like, you guys won one game, relax. But no, it's fun. I love being up here. I love the rivalry, and I'm excited to go to the game, and hopefully I come out in one piece.
Yeah, you should. You probably will. Yeah, you probably will. I grew up right outside of Chicago, so I'm also a big Bears fan. And when you tweeted about, like, how you thought Aaron Rodgers would come to the Steelers, I was like, no, I don't want that. I already have to deal with that. I don't want any more of that smoke.
Like, that's funny.
It's like, I can't deal with this. Yeah. Of all the rivalries in all of sports, this one's probably my favorite between the Browns and the Steelers. It's so close to each other. Mm-hmm. When the team left and became the Ravens, like, I think I actually hate the Ravens more. but the Steelers had, like, this soft spot for us. Like, I remember so many Steelers fans being like, I'm so sorry, this is not what we wanted. Like, we wanted to play against you. Like, we want to continue to play you. Yeah. And when they came back, I just remember all these Steelers fans I knew who were like, okay, so friendship's over. It's not over, but, like, we're not super cool during the football season now. And I just love that it was like they picked up right where they were in, I think it was like 2009 or 2008, whenever swine flu was going on, because I had swine flu. And then when the doctor said I was good to go back to work, instead of going back to work, I went to the Browns Steelers game in Cleveland. It was like -10 at kickoff with the wind chill. And they won that game. Like, the Browns won that game. And I was like, do I still have swine flu? Like, am I hallucinating? It was such a fun game. And it's like it's a pure rivalry. I feel like it's pure between the two fan bases. I don't think that the two fan bases actually hate each other as much as we want to think that they do.
Listen, Pittsburgh and Cleveland are the same city, and no one loves to say that, but they are.
No, same they are.
People, the same feelings, the same, all that. They're just the same. They just like to root against each other.
Yeah. Well, I went to Pittsburgh for the first time ever in the fall of 2016, fall of 2015, which is crazy because, like, I've lived in Northeast Ohio since 1996. So it's a long time to not go to Pittsburgh because it's only like an hour and 45 minutes away.
Yeah.
I went to go interview the executive director, Nancy, from the Mario Lemieux Foundation. And I pull into Pittsburgh and I was like, oh no, no, no. Like, I already can tell I'm going to like it here.
Yeah.
I am going to like it. And she was like, oh, so this is your first time here. Like, here's all these places to go visit. And as I was walking around and people were just talking to me and I'm like, this is literally like Cleveland. Yeah. It is like 100% like Cleveland. All it's missing is a chandelier in the middle. That's all it's missing. And it just, it's wonderful. And I think part of it might be like the proximity for one, but, you know, just the build of the socioeconomic background of the towns, but also Pittsburgh doesn't have a basketball team. And Cleveland for a long time didn't have, well, Cleveland doesn't have an NHL team. And for the longest time, Ohio didn't. So you see like the fan bases kind of cross in that sense. Like, you see Pittsburgh Steelers fans at Cavs games and like huge Browns fans at Penguins games. And I'm like, oh, this is like the Twilight Zone.
No, it's true.
Yeah. And I love it. You're right. They're so similar. I mean, the music scene is similar. The food's similar. Like, so much stuff is similar. And I'm like,
I know.
Why do people that hate Pittsburgh, I don't think have ever visited it.
Yeah. Or they just hate it. Just hate it.
Just to, yeah. Kind of like how I am with the Yankees. It's fine.
Yeah.
Well, awesome. I hope you survive that game. I hope that if they're going to split, I hope that the Browns lose it so that the Browns can win it in Three Rivers. I hope that happens.
Yeah.
Awesome. And then Baker comes out and just plants a Browns flag, yeah. Right?
Well, it's real grass, so maybe it'll actually be a stick this time.
That's the one thing I miss about Baker is I've just been waiting for him to do something so petty like he did when he was at Oklahoma. I'm like, I just need a little bit of that. I need a little bit of that. And that's all I'm asking. Just a little bit. Can you just give me? Really quick. So I love Juju. He's like my favorite Steeler, which I hope no one hates me for saying that, but I love that he doesn't give a shit what you think about him.
Yeah.
He's like, awesome. He's like, I'm young. I love social media and I love football. What are you going to do about it?
I never understood the vitriol against him. He's awesome. He's such a hard-nosed like worker, and you know, I don't care what he does against. I don't care what he does off the field. If he shows up and I mean, to a point, obviously.
Right. There's an amendment to that.
Yeah. But you know, I if he wants to make TikToks and stream video games when he's at home, you don't have to think about football. You don't have to think about your sport every minute of every day. It's okay to like relax. So I love him. I hope he comes back. I know he's going to be a free agent. I think they'll re-sign him. I think especially if, you know, Mike Tomlin is one of the player's favorite coach across the league. So hopefully that pulls some weight, but if not, I'll cheer for him wherever he goes.
Yeah. Well, I hope he comes here. Not the Bears, because the Bears will ruin him. That's a conversation. This is about the beauty. This podcast is about the beauty in life, and the Bears are not the beauty in life right now. Sure. So we're not going to touch on that. Well, thank you for joining me tonight.
Of course.
Feel free to drop. Oh, you're welcome. Yeah. You're definitely one of my favorite follows.
Oh, awesome. I appreciate that.
Yes. Because you're unproblematic, I guess is the way of saying it. Like you said, you don't have an opinion on everything. I feel like when you're producing content, it's genuinely you.
Yeah.
And not anyone else, or not because everyone else is doing it, which is a nice breath of fresh air, because too many times people are like, you said, we have to do it this way. And you're like, no, it's not my scene.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. So you brighten my timeline, because I'm like, oh, palate cleanser, Alex tweeting.
I appreciate that a lot. Thank you.
You're welcome. Well, promote whatever you need to promote, your social, anything like that. I know you have that resume online, right?
Yeah. Yeah. No. AlecPalmer.co. You can always go to check out my work, but just shoot me a follow at AlecPalmer__ on Twitter. You're going to see a little bit of everything, but it's me. And I take pride in making sure my social media reflects who I am, and not any type of person that other people want me to be. So, hopefully you'll like it. And if not, that's okay. But if you do, shoot me a DM. I'd love to chat.
That's awesome. Again, thank you.
Of course. Thank you, Erling.
My theme music is One Light by Nick Wilkinson and the Featured Players. You can find their latest album, Live Volume 1, on Bandcamp and Spotify. Live Volume 1 was recorded in front of a live audience on May 26, 2017 at Jilly's Music Room in Akron, Ohio.